Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans applies simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Thanks so much for being with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up this hour, former WWE star Christian is going to join us. He's now the host of a TV series called Night Fight, where contestants dress up as medieval knights, fight each other. Are there swords involved in this?
Well, we're going to have to ask Christian coming up in 15 minutes to see exactly what's going on here.
So you haven't seen a trailer or a promotion or anything?
No, I've only read the content. I actually probably would watch an episode. You get me into Zubaz on the couch with the crevice. You sit there. Why not? Watch a couple people fight.
Well, that's what's interesting. I mean, if you have swords, this could be really dangerous and interesting. But if it's like an American Gladiators thing, so interesting.
But how could it be dangerous if they're wearing armored suits? I imagine the armor technology is a lot greater now than it did when we used to fight people to the death.
Like in the medieval times?
Yeah, in the medieval times. I mean, they fight at medieval times now in the restaurants, and those people survive.
Yeah, but they're not really trying to kill each other.
If this was a contestant, if this was a game show and you had $1 million on the line, you would really try to maim somebody else.
Yeah, but I don't, like, maybe the neck's off limits. It's like headshots in the NFL.
All right, but what happens about cutting off a guy's wrist? Like, what happens if you're Luke Skywalker in a lightsaber duel? Do you just lose the wrist? If I'm seeing wrists be lost in Night Fight, now I'm in.
But again, the equipment, my guess would be player safety has to be taken into account here.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard steel. That's not cutting out with a sword. You're going to need some kind of sledgehammer or, dare I say, a hacksaw to get through that.
Well, this is what's also a little bit interesting, because if it's pure steel, as you say, that's a really heavy armor for a regular Joe to carry. So, what about flexibility? You're talking about, you know, trying to find football equipment to allow more rotation. It's like Michael Bennett's shoulder pads and sleeves.
Yes.
I wonder.
I mean, but you don't know. But that's what makes this show so interesting. And I would also say this.
What, this show? Our show or that show?
That show.
Night Fight.
Night Fight. And I would also say this. Why are we not concerned about these people still fencing? They're basically wearing, you know, sheetrock, a bird's, a bee mask, and you got something that could poke a hole through that. You could lose an eye fencing. But yet people are doing that in high school every day. Why are we not locked in with that on TV?
Would you really watch fencing when we have fencing in the Olympics? Do you ever watch?
No, but I don't think it gets enough pub. Like, if NBC Sports Network carried a good package after the NHL season ended, and I knew I was going to see some bloodshed, you can't tell me nobody's ever gotten bloodied up in a good fencing bout.
I don't know that, because I think it just pokes. I don't think you can really get bloodied up with a poker.
Have you ever been poked by anything at home? I mean, a fork, anything?
She's a bad girl, David.
Now. You could...
Yeah, how am I going to bleed if I get poked? What am I getting poked by?
I've poked my lip with a fork before and I've bled.
And you would watch that on TV?
Well, but now we're factoring in arteries and stuff.
Arteries?
Yeah.
So the closest...
Lose an eye?
So you would be worried about somebody with a fork poking an artery?
No. A poker in fencing.
Yeah.
The fence, or I guess... The piece of fence,
the
whatever it is.
The piece of fence that we're poking each other's artery with.
That is long and that is pointy. You could get poked out.
Poked out. Poked out and then bled out.
That would be the package. Create the league called Poked Out.
Poked Out.
Poked Out. Hey, I think there's room there. And I think we get Wilkins and Bogus on the call.
So, I mean, look, if we're worried about spring football right now, why wouldn't Poked Out?
Look, you know what? I got it. I have it. Everybody wants Robbie back on the show? February 15th, me and him fence each other in here. He beats me, he can come back.
Whoever gets poked out.
Whoever gets poked out, yeah.
Survives.
Yes. If he slays me with the fencing sword, then he could come back.
All right. So if Robbie beats Mraz in a fencing competition, then we will have a 5-episode arc of PTI, Poking the Interruption. Saints fans have every right to be squirrely and miserable and angry after the weekend. That is the worst single no call in NFL history. And after the game, you had Michael Thomas of the New Orleans Saints bringing to the attention of the public that there is actually a way to fix this. There is the commissioner's powers under the Section 2 rule part of the book, part of the rule book. The reversal of a game's result of the rescheduling of a game, either from the beginning or from the point at which an extraordinary, unfair act occurred. Rule 17, Section 2, Article 3. That if there is something that is so obviously unfair, the commissioner's office does have the wherewithal, does have the power to say, we'll replay the game in its entirety, or we will replay the end of the game from that spot. I would imagine it would have to be from this spot, but the commissioner's office does have the unilateral power to say that pass interference was so bad and so obvious and so evident, and that the Saints should have benefited from that and should have been able to take a knee 3 times to kick a field goal to win, that we will replay the end of the game from that spot, or we will replay the entire game. Now they have a bye week. Some in New Orleans have suggested replaying Saints and Rams this Sunday, which for football purposes would be great. I wouldn't mind one extra NFC championship game coming up on Sunday. We've got no football scheduled as it is. Obviously not going to happen. But it was brought to our attention by Saints fans, Thomas, etc. And it made me wonder, Mraz, I didn't realize, I guess, that this existed. I suppose I assumed it did in my subconscious, that if something really crazy ever happened, the league could reverse the call or have it replayed or whatever, could go back and replay a game or a part of the game. But I guess I never really thought about it. Under that, we know that they're not going to replay this NFC Championship game. We know there's no way, no matter how many thousands of signatures they get in this petition. But it makes me wonder, what could happen? What is a realistic thing that could happen that the commissioner would then have to say, you know what, we're replaying the NFC Championship game?
It has to be, to me, let's take you back to, remember Deshaun Jackson returning the punt where he gets in the open field versus the Giants that year?
Okay.
Tom Coughlin runs on the field and spears Deshaun Jackson because all the defenders have given up.
Okay, so Deshaun Jackson is racing down the sideline, wide open, and Tom Coughlin, so irate, so angry, in the middle of the moment, a fit of rage, runs onto the field and trips Deshaun Jackson.
Trips Deshaun Jackson down. He stumbles. A defender catches him, touches Jackson down. They obviously would flag the Giants 15 yards, whatever. The Eagles would have an untimed down in that scenario back in 2010. The throw goes incomplete. Game goes to overtime. Giants win the toss, go down the field, score, win. They end up winning the division, yada, yada, yada. If this rule was in place, clearly Deshaun Jackson is running in with nobody there to catch him, a touchdown. I guess Roger Goodell could reverse the result and say there should have never been a 15-yard penalty. The game's over on a touchdown because that was the only way to stop him. Or if a fan ran out of the stands and punched Jackson in the face and knocked him down. Anything like that. An act of God, if you will.
An act of God. I mean, I don't think it could be a weather event because the weather event would effectively affect both teams.
Right. It would have to be something that only affected. And it can't be, you know, Todd Gurley has the stomach bug. Like, that doesn't matter. It has to be something where they're in the middle of a play that will win the game.
What happens if we found out after the game that Tom Brady was kidnapped and they didn't allow him out? They held him for ransom. A Chiefs fan group. Okay, kidnapped Brady, didn't let him out, and the Patriots end up losing because they're playing Brian Hoyer at quarterback on Sunday. Does Goodell go back and say that is inherently unfair? The quarterback should not have been kidnapped. We've got to replay the AFC title game.
Well, the thing is, D, we almost had a situation like this in Boston, if you remember that famous Jazz-Celtics NBA Finals where Dan Aykroyd actually kidnapped one of the Wayans brothers. And, you know, luckily he escaped and the Jazz were still able to prevail and win the NBA Finals. But had the Celtics lost that, or had the Jazz lost that Finals without him, what would David Stern back then have done? So, yeah, I think that's where you would have to reverse it.
Immortalize in the film, the documentary film, Celtic Pride. No, but honestly, could they reverse the championship game?
I think they could.
Really? If Tom Brady's
kidnapping?
Yes. So that's an inherently unfair act, or is it up to the Patriots to be able to overcome that?
They got to overcome? What, are they got? They hired Liam Neeson now? How are they going to overcome that?
I've got a very particular set of skills.
How could you overcome that? No. The problem is, though, like, what are you going to pick it up? Like, Tom Brady's found Monday, and now you're going to go, all right, guys, listen, we got to get everybody back to the stadium Wednesday. Let's get flights.
Yes.
Like, the particulars of that would be off. And if they decided this after the Super Bowl, we're going to replay a Super Bowl, then what, interferes with the Alliance of American Football season?
I don't think you can replay a game after a kidnapping. I really don't, because the team that suffers the kidnapping has to be prepared going into that game. You know, maybe if Tom Brady's kidnapped at halftime, they don't have him after the half. But the Patriots, I think, have to be responsible for having next man up. I mean, do your job. How about if the Saints are driving for a game-winning touchdown, they're down one. Let's just say there's two-minute warning. They're down one. They're driving inside the red zone. And the Jumbotron falls onto the field, and there's just literally no way to play. There is no way to play because there is a giant Jumbotron in the middle of the field. There's a dent. There's a crater. Sparks going off. They've got to evacuate the stadium. At that point in time, I'm guessing they can't call the game. They've got to replay the game from that point on, right?
Yeah, so we're not going to finish that day. My guess would be in a scenario like that, Roger Goodell has to have the authority to say, we're going to go play this game at LSU tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Well, because at that point, everybody's already in from out of town. I think that's a situation. I think once, and this is what I mean, once you've let everybody get on their airplanes and go home, I don't think you could reverse the ruling. Like, once the Rams have flown back to L.A., I don't think Goodell could do anything about that. At least in that scenario, you'd have officials hovering around.
Well, let me pose this. What happens if you found out a week later that the officials were bribed, that the officials were hoping that they had money on the Rams, or that they had been held at gunpoint before, their family was in danger, they had to get the Rams to win, and that's why they didn't throw the flag on the pass interference, and you found that out through documentation later? Would you have to replay the game knowing that the entire thing was tainted because the officials are trying to get the Rams in the Super Bowl?
I think too much time has passed. In that case, you give the Rams an extra 2 first-round picks.
You mean the Saints?
I'm sorry, the Saints.
Okay, so you
the Rams
are in the Super Bowl, even though we know the officials try to get them there, and you just give the Saints a couple of first-rounders.
What are you going to do now? We're going to back up the Super Bowl? Money talks. You can't do that. Then you're asking Gladys Knight to come back and sing a week later. There's too many people involved there. Once a week has passed, I think you fire the officials, sweeping changes, but you have to give the Ram or the Saints a sweetener going forward so that help them get back to that spot again. Maybe you give them an extra $15 million cap space than any other team.
Okay, so let's ask this. Should the NFL do something for the Saints after Sunday? I mean, we're kind of walking that line, right?
We're walking it. The problem is,
the NFL will not admit any of this, by the way, so it's not like this is really going to happen. But if we are admitting that if we found out the officials were on the take, they deserve something, do they deserve something just for the officials being so bad at their job?
Look, here's the problem with this, and this is not to poo-poo anything. If you think that's not a bad call, you're an idiot. We all understand it's a bad call.
I think 99.99% of observers say it's bad.
There's no hot take you could have to tell me it's a bad call. You could tell me the Saints could have done other things to win the game, which I think the league would point to, which I do think is true. The problem is, if you do this, you open up a can of worms that,
correct,
when we didn't have the technology, it's kind of like, you know, people go to jail and then DNA comes out later to reverse it where you like didn't have DNA to prove it.
Right.
We could go back through the annals of NFL history.
Annals
of NFL history, where we didn't have the freeze frame, NBC it review, and all this stuff, where you could look back and go, wow, the officials really botched that. There might be, we're 53 Super Bowls in now, three stripes, whatever. Mm-hmm. You could make the case there could be 12 Super Bowl champions that may not deserve it based on horrible officiating in the past, but we don't really know about it or remember it.
Well, look, I think this is really interesting that there is a rule in the rule book that says the commissioner can overturn an outcome of a game if it's inherently unfair. If the outcome is obviously unfair, I would like to know what that includes. What are they preparing for? What is the act of God that would be that unfair? I really would like to know. If you've got any insight on this, hit me up. 855-212-4CBS on the phones. 855-212-4227 on Twitter. DA on CBS. We'll jump back into your phone calls on a Trash Tuesday. Also, host of Night Fight, where people dress up as medieval knights and fight. Former WWE star Christian will join us coming up next as well. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The way sports talk was meant to be, on an imaginary spaceship.
Super Bowl? Super Bowl.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Happy Trash Tuesday to you, boys and girls. Let us know what you're trashing, who you're trashing, what you're venting about by dialing us up at 855-212-4CBS or on Twitter, DA on CBS. We'll jump back into your phone calls coming up here momentarily, but first, our next guest had a 20-plus year career in the WWE ring, where he entertained fans and gained notoriety worldwide. World Heavyweight Championship on two occasions. He won 20 total championships in WWE, including multiple tag team title reigns with his close friend Adam Edge Copeland. And now he's the host of the History Channel's series Night Fight, which is full contact armored combat league, often referred to as medieval MMA or Night Fight Club. You've got fighters dressed up in medieval knight armor, hacking away with one another, and the winner walks away with a championship title, $10,000, and a spot in the season finale for a chance to become the first ever Night Fight champion. Joining us here on the show is Christian. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I really appreciate that intro. You make me, you know, you kind of built me up here. I'm kind of walking around with like a peacock with my chest out a little bit. That was going through all my accomplishments there. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Well, now you are a Night Fight aficionado, and so I've got so many questions about this. I watched the promo. I read about this, but I've got questions. Let's start here. Is this mano a mano, or is this team armored fighting?
Well, that's the thing. It goes, you know, it's a competition series, obviously. And so it starts, you know, there's a melee format, which is every man for himself. There'll be multiple competitors in there. And then, you know, we pull from there. And when knights advance, they go into a team situation. And then from there, it ends up mano a mano.
Okay, so it's a little bit like a Royal Rumble. Everybody runs into the ring, and it's just chaos, right, and a frenzy. And then little by little, you wean it down because guys get eliminated.
Right, exactly. So, and it's tough, you know, because you're in there, you know, you're fighting for your competitive life, so to speak, and you know, you're doling out punishment, you're taking punishment for certain guys. There's certain personalities that mesh with each other as far as, you know, the personalities on the show go, and next thing you know, you could be teamed up with somebody that you were just trying to take your head off, and you were trying to take their head off, or somebody you might not like very much, and next thing you know, you find yourself in a team with them, and you have to work together, and that's the only way you could advance. So it throws some drama and some wrinkles into the show for sure.
Okay, so now tell me about the actual armor and the weaponry. Is this homemade armor, or do you get armor from like an equipment magazine or some type of, I don't know, like locker in the back room?
Well, that's the thing about these knights, these competitors. You know, they really have a lot of pride and take honor in what it is that they do. This is, you know, they bring their own armor, and they work on it themselves. A lot of them have armors, or they know how to weld and do the things themselves. But what we do have two world-class armorers working with them on our show. But for the most part, you know, they bring their own stuff. And their armor is like a glove. You know, they get used to it. They feel comfortable in it. Same with the different type of weapons. You know, you have some gigantic men that use kind of the bigger, heavier weapons. You'll have some smaller guys that are using smaller lighter weapons that are more versatile to kind of, they can adapt that better with their style. But we do present them. We throw them some curveballs. We present them with some armor and weaponry from historical eras throughout different periods, and that they might not be used to. So they there's that as well. So there's a lot of obstacles these guys have to overcome for a chance to become Night Fight champion.
We're talking about the new series on History Channel, Night Fight. So I'm thinking back to me and my dad building a Pinewood Derby car when I was in Boy Scouts together. We're trying to figure out where the weight should be and how the wheels and the axles should work. You're telling me that families are getting together and building their own medieval armor to wear in this. They're welding armor.
Yeah. That's bonding.
That's amazing. That is really... So how dangerous is this? Because I'm watching the clips. I'm not seeing blood spurt anywhere. I'm not seeing limbs get cut off. But I would imagine back in medieval times, that is usually what would happen. Arms would just be severed off. How dangerous is this?
Right. It's a combat sport. It's a hard-hitting, action-packed sport, much like you'd see with football or MMA or boxing or... any contact sport, it's the same type of dangers that go into this. These guys are the best of the best that come on the show. They know what they're getting themselves into. They compete. A lot of them in the Armored Combat League. A lot of them are on the national team that travel internationally to compete. So they know what they're doing. They're the best of the best. But what was this first part of the question again? I just drew a blank.
Well, here's the thing. I think you're underselling this a little bit here, Jay, because. Yes, there are combat sports, and yes, there's football, and yes, there's MMA, but none of them have medieval weaponry. None of them have swords and clubs.
I was going to talk about the severing of the limbs.
Yes. I need to know about the severing.
Yeah, so the weapons are full size and scale and weight, but they're blunted. So obviously they're not sharp, so you're not going to see the severing of the limbs and those sorts of things. But, these guys, they're equipped in their armor. You're looking at at least 80 pounds of extra weight on top of your body. So when you get knocked down, it's going to be a bit of a bitch to try to get back up. When you have that helm on, the vision isn't great. You kind of have to have your head on a swivel. You gotta know where you're at. And we judge these competitors on aggression, technique, and defense. So if you're applying that to the best of your abilities, a better chance for you to advance in the competition.
So I think that's a really interesting part here, because back in medieval time, my guess is that you win when you sever a limb. The other guy dies. You cut off his head, something like this, right? And in MMA, you have to be pinned, obviously. You have to be tapped out. And so what constitutes a win in Night Fight?
Well, it's the same thing. If the judges decide there's three of us, there's a guy named Andre Sanu, who is one of the founding members of the Armored Combat League, and the other guy's name is John Clements, who is one of the world's foremost professional instructors of medieval and Renaissance fighting arts. So these guys are experts, and between the three of us, we decide, who applies those three traits the best. And sometimes we agree and sometimes we don't, and that can be the fun of the show as well. And other times, if somebody's physically unable to keep going, that decides it as well.
Gotcha. Okay, so one of the combatants goes down to the ground, can't get up, he's got a concussion, he's whatever, he's woozy or whatever, you can call the fight. But if there is no kind of drop like that, you guys judge who you felt was better in that round.
Yeah, and sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes you can tell right away that somebody has won a fight clearly, and sometimes it's a razor thin decision. And like I said, sometimes the judges we don't always agree on what we saw, and so sometimes there's a little friction there as well with that. I think also another important part of the show is as much as the physicality is great, but getting to know the knights on a personal level I think is important too, to have a connection with the audience. I think the personalities really come through in their interview segments, where I think you'll find yourself, maybe the viewer will like certain guys more than others, and they'll cheer for more guys over certain other guys. And I think that's also the beauty, when you can have that connection with the viewer, where that adds some extra drama to the show.
Yeah, the personal interest story of the medieval knights, right? I mean, you got to get to know, you got to get inside the knights' heads at this point.
Right.
It's great. This is phenomenal. This is very cool. So the History Channel is going to have Night Fight. And when can our listeners catch these episodes?
So it premieres Wednesday, January 23rd at 10 p.m. After Vikings. And it'll be every Wednesday at 10 after that.
Okay, so, cool. So that's tomorrow night it debuts.
Right. So, I mean, like I said, I could sit here and talk about it all day, but honestly, my words don't do it justice, the how good the show is.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of all the knights that have competed on the show. You know, for them, this has been pretty much an underground sport at this point, and this is the biggest stage that they've ever been put on or had the chance to perform on. And to put it in wrestling terms, this is the WrestleMania for these guys, and they go out there and they leave it all in the ring. And they all want to be that first champion. They all want to be recognized as the first ever Night Fight champion. So it's a big deal for them, and it really shines through. And like I said, if you like action, if you like some drama, if you like personality, if you like brutality, it's a beautiful mixture of all of those things.
The promo looks really cool. I know all the guys here, as we're doing this interview, everybody's ears have perked up. Everybody's eyes have gotten wide. We're all into this, so this is very cool. Jay, I appreciate you dropping on by today, man. We'll be watching tomorrow night. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Jay Riso, who played Christian in WWE for 20 years, is now one of the hosts, or the host, one of the judges of Night Fight, Medieval Knights Fighting on the History Channel, Wednesday nights, beginning tomorrow night. And there's just a lot there. There's a lot there to unpack. I am now waiting for the Aaron Andrews sit down with one of the knights, kind of getting inside their backstory, when they first thought about becoming a medieval knight, how long it took to build their chainmail. Frankly, how sharp is that sword that they're using?
Look, let's be honest. Night Fight in the Alliance of American Football has got February lit. I cannot wait.
No longer is there an abyss of sports in February. We got Night Fight and the Alliance.
90 minutes ago, mocking the idea on the Tuesday after conference championship day. Now we're looking around going, I got to get more Night Fight spots here.
I'm going to have a Night Fight watch party tomorrow night.
Well, how do you not? I still got some leftovers from Sunday. Let's fire them back up. Throw a Tombstone Pizza in the oven and let's roll.
I know. I got beers left over from Sunday's football games. I've got a few little Smokies, Baker Wrap little Smokies that the Bourbon Bell made. I'm throwing them in the oven. We're watching Night Fight tomorrow night.
I don't know how you don't. I don't know how you don't. I'm ready to go.
I got the guys coming over for Night Fight.
I'm ready to run through a wall or a horse for Christian. They are on horses, right?
No horses.
Oh.
No. No horses. It's not joust.
But knights rode horses when they fought.
Some, I guess, do, but not these. When we come back here on the DA Show, D Ford talks about being an expletive in Kansas City sports history. Plus, we'll get back to your phone calls on the topics Trash Tuesday and what would it take for the NFL to truly reverse an outcome like the NFC Championship game. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
DA on the network. Got a spaceship, that guy. That's how he does the show.
Did you DA know that? Does the mothership.
Yeah, it's a mothership. Landed. Yeah,
what does that even mean?
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You can listen to full episodes of the show by simply downloading it on iTunes. Search DA and CBS. You can subscribe there to get full episodes of the show, full hours of the show, full interviews of the show. Anything you may have missed or want to hear again. Also, on the website, if you don't have iTunes, just go to daoncbs.com. The Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week. It's Rex Burkhead. Patriots running back had 12 carries, only 41 yards, but two touchdowns. The big difference in this game, Burkhead had just 186 yards on the ground during the regular season, but comes up clutch as so many Patriots players do when it matters most. The Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Granger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it at Granger.com. Dixie Landan tweets, DA, you should have asked him if they make armor big enough for Robbie Moraz to send them into a ring and start hacking away at all that flubber in a real battle of the bulge. Hashtag, you need to fight like this.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
We just spoke to former WWE champ Christian, who's now the host, Jay Riso, of Night Fight on the History Channel, which debuts tomorrow night. And it's real people making their own armor and fighting in a Royal Rumble-esque
medieval knight fight with weapons, but that are blunted, apparently. So I was really looking forward to maybe hacking off limbs. That's not happening. They're blunted. So it's more like, it feels like it's more like the art of fighting instead of actual bloody gore and kicking ass. Because he kind of said, like, some guys will fall down and it'll be hard to get up because if it's 80 pounds of armor. But I got to imagine, unless you hit a guy in the head with some type of huge log, then, and he gets a concussion, it's hard to, like a tree branch or something with like a spike at the end of it, it's hard to actually beat a guy.
Look, if you're looking for blood, I agree you're not going to get it, but don't tell me somebody can't get really beat up here. I mean, have you ever been whacked in the back with a remote control, like for changing the channel rolling? Things like that hurt. To me, it's all about building the best equipment. And if they're building their own equipment and not being handed that, that's where you're going to lose.
Okay, but you're
best welder may win.
But you're telling me that if you get hit with a blunt log 10 times in your body, you'll just collapse because of weakness?
Yes, it's still a log, as blunt as it may be. It's just going to protect against the blood. You won't bleed, but you could get bruised.
I know, but would you fall down, go boom, knock it up if you were hit by a log if you had armor on?
Yeah, that's my point. If the armor's not built right, which I think is the X factor here. You'd fall if you got hit with a log.
So a series of internal injuries is what you're guessing could be what decides the victor.
Right. If you want blood, it's going to be because they're coughing it up from internal bleeding. You're not going to get the exterior bleeding, which is fine with me. I think people are still going to get hit.
Yeah, I don't know. This kind of feels like an armored version of the inflatable sumo suits.
Those are stupid, though, because they're inflatable. This is at least armor. You're going to hear the clanking.
But something over top of you, you keep whacking into one another. Does anybody really get hurt?
No, but that's built on a mat. But real sumo wrestlers get hurt.
Like when medieval knights were fighting, there was a clear-cut winner. Whoever cut off the other guy's arm, right? If you cut off the other guy's arm or head or leg, you win. In this case, without that, why do we really need the armor?
But that's like saying I only watched the NFL in the 70s and don't watch now. Clearly, there have been advancements in technology and player safety.
It's a different scoring system. In football, you're trying to get into the end zone. That's clearly worth 7 points, the same way it was in 1974. This is not the same scoring system as the medieval times. Medieval times, the scoring system is no limb, I win.
Yeah, but they weren't in a league. That was just done to die. You know what I mean? Like, that was done for revenge. Like, that's how you took care of your business. You strapped on the suit and said, I'm going to go fight that other knight, and I'm going to kill him. This is not, you know, you want everybody to survive and play nice.
I'm just totally worried about the scoring system here. And so now it's left to the judges. And I want the player to decide it on the field.
And as we learned on Sunday, officials can ruin everything.
Exactly.
But maybe controversy would be good for this league entering year two next year. And maybe they'll make some advancements and find some real defined scoring.
Richard on a Trash Tuesday tweets, I'm trashing my car. I'm stuck on 95 and the motor just goes. Tow truck is 25 minutes away. Get them freaking out.
Hot trash.
Samantha tweets, I'm trashing this guy, Phil McKinley, line judge from the game the other day. I'm not even a Saints fan, but how do you miss that call?
Must be Trash Tuesday.
All right, there's an internet meme that she just tweeted at me that shows or says that Phil McKinley, who was the back judge on this play, played for the Rams back in the early 80s. I don't know if this is true. Can we please check this? There's a picture of a Rams jersey that says McKinley. I would find it hard to believe that suddenly there's just an offensive lineman from the 80s jersey lying around. But let's check on this. Is it possible the line judge actually played for the Rams back in the 80s?
I got the answer. He did play in the NFL, mainly for the Atlanta Falcons and also the Memphis Showboats. Then, he played for the Rams in 1981, just 1 year.
So the back judge on the play who could have been responsible for throwing a flag, although all of the officials could have thrown the flag, but he would be the back judge. He would have a pretty good look at things. He played for the Rams for a season?
Yep. He was a Falcon for 4 years, a Ram for 1 year, a Bear for 1 year, and a Memphis Showboat for 1 year.
Offensive lineman?
Offensive tackle out of UCLA, was drafted in the ninth round in 1976 and then later transitioned to being an official.
All right, that's a bad look. That's a bad look. How does the NFL put a former Ram on a Rams-Saints championship game?
Do you know who this ref is?
Phil McKinley.
Yeah. Do you know what he's famous for as an official?
Don't know.
He's the official with the flags that Bart Scott threw into the crowd.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Bart mentioned this, that he was a former lineman, a big dude. Yeah, I'm looking right now. He's famous for that closing minutes of the Raven-Patriot game with the unsportsmanlike penalty when Raven linebacker Bart Scott picked up the penalty flag he threw and threw it into the stands.
Which gifted the Patriots another chance to beat the Ravens in their undefeated season. Really, the Ravens had them beat on that, I think it was a Monday night in 07.
Monday night game, yep, December 3rd, 2007. How about that?
You're putting a former Ram on a Rams-Saints NFC Championship game?
Now, you could also say, though, he only played 1 year. The Rams cut him. He could have anger towards the Rams.
Well, that's what I mean. Wouldn't you just kind of avoid it altogether?
I think once you played, or do you actually like the fact that he played because he knows the rules better?
Oh, I don't mind that he played, but I just think he's played for two football teams and the Memphis Showboats. Two NFL teams and the Memphis Showboats?
Well, three. The Falcons, Bears, and Rams.
All right, so I would keep him off games that he played for.
How about just do the AFC?
Right, yes, exactly. Yes. On a Trash Tuesday, Daryl tweets, I'm trashing fast food places that offers breakfast all day, but no full menu before 10:30 or 11. You're saying I can have a sausage biscuit at 4 in the afternoon, but no cheeseburger at 8 in the morning? Trash them.
Epic trash job.
I don't hate that take by Daryl. I agree. If you're going to offer me breakfast all day, why can't I have hamburgers all day? I agree. You got to go a 24-hour menu there. Sorry. It's just the way that it has to be.
You know what? I agree with you.
You got to be consistent there.
You do have to be consistent. Because what if somebody wakes up at 3 in the morning, has their banana at 4 a.m. and at 10 a.m. wants their cheeseburger?
Well, we worked overnights for 2 years.
Very healthy.
We weren't ready for double cheeseburgers at 7 a.m.?
Oh, I was.
I know.
I was. Several times I said, why are we going out to breakfast? I'm starving here. Mm-hmm.
Lewis is in Palmdale, listening online, CBSSportsRadio.com. Lewis, who are you trashing?
Beam me up, yeah.
There you go.
I would like to congratulate Tony Romo for finally making it to the Super Bowl as a commentator. Romo impressed many over the weekend, just like Karnak the Magnificent on The Tonight Show. Well, D.A., I can do it as well. Morass just handed me an envelope. A child of four can plainly see that the envelope has been hermetically sealed. This envelope has been kept in a mayonnaise jar in Satan's Kingdom, Vermont. No one knows the content of the envelope, but I, Lewis in Palmdale, in my own mystical and divine way, will ascertain the answer to the question, having never before seen the question. D.A., a moment of silence, please. Charlie Sheen, Bob Kraft, Robbie Rosenhaus.
Charlie Sheen, Bob Kraft, Robbie Rosenhaus.
Name a user, a boozer, and a loser.
Oh!
D.A., I really, don't care what people do with their lives. They could love whoever they want. They could do whatever operations they want. They could stick needles wherever they need to. But please, I want to trash smokers who flick their cigarette butts. I was at a traffic light right at Wilshire and Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills, one of the most expensive boulevards in the world. And next to my little Kia was this stunning Asian lady in a brand new Mercedes-Benz. And, she was sucking on her cancer stick. And while my thoughts were thinking evil things of what she was doing, she gets her cigarette and flicks it on the ground, man. And I support people's choice to smoke. I'm not one of these people who cough when people are smoking around me or anything like that. But look, if you don't want to dirty your damn car up, don't flick that thing in the on the ground. Throw it. Put it in the trash. Smokers who flick their cigarette butts, get them out.
Get them out.
Trash Tuesday is fun for everyone.
I think that's a good trash. I don't care if you smoke. It's up to you. But it's not like we can all just throw all of our trash all over the place. It's like, oh, I really like Gatorade, and so my bottle is just going to go onto the street. Oh, you know what? I really like cheeseburger, so my wrapper just goes onto the street. Yeah, it's little. How about on the beach? People just throw cigarette butts on the beach all day long. Hey, man, I can't just throw my trash on the beach. Stop flicking. The flickers. Stop flicking. Our toll-free line brought to you by GEICO. Everyone, there's a quick way you could save money switching to GEICO. Need homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all at GEICO.com. Josh is next up. He's in York, PA, listening on 1440 to CBS Sports Radio. Josh, who are you trashing?
Oh, man, D.A., I got to trash the entire reffing system. It's 2019. Why don't we have computer referees by now?
So you want completely computerized, mechanized officiating for the NFL?
I mean, think about all the technology. We got, you know, robots that can operate on people. I'm sure if we use computers, we could use all kind of algorithms to decide, you know, how much is a ticky-tack call on pass interference or what's blatant. And you could literally have everything set to percentages as far as, you know, was the receiver impeded by a certain percentage downfield.
Trash Tuesday is fun for everyone.
I'll tell you this. I don't know if I'm completely on board with 100% mechanized officiating, but if there was robotic officials, I would say there's less than a 0.00001% chance that the officials would not have thrown, the robot officials would not have thrown a flag on the Saints and Rams, obvious pass interference. Like if it was Phil McKinley Autobot 236X, McKinley Autobot 99.9999999% of the time throws a flag on that play. Roby Coleman gets flagged by McKinley Autobot. Pereira Autobot 768. So we had to skip soundcheck because Lewis and Palmdale had an epic phone call. We'll get to that coming up in hour number three. Also, the NFL selling its soul to London again next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.